You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith. Today I am bringing you this podcast live, recorded live at the Vault Comedy Festival. Oh, it's a theatre festival as well, actually, all sorts of things there, which takes place in the vaults beneath Waterloo. It goes on for weeks and weeks, and it's one of those environments that if I'd walked into it when I was 22, it would have changed my life. Absolutely. It's like an undercity. It's like a sort of, it's fringy as hell. And if you don't hear this in time to visit it this time, definitely put it in your diary for next time. Really, really exciting kind of catacombs and secret rooms, 7 or 8 venues maybe, really exciting bars. And it's all tucked away on down Leake Street in central London, which is entertainingly graffitied sort of an area. Feels really special and futuristic and kind of made of pallets, you know, proper fringy. Anyway, that's where we recorded this episode, in a cellar in which certainly someone has been murdered. And it's with police cops. Now, they used to be called the Pretend Men, and the Police Cops is their most successful show. They've taken the name Police Cops. So look out for them, really. They've only done 2 shows. They're very, very green, certainly in terms of in the context of this podcast usual guests. They've only done the 2 shows, as far as I'm aware, Police Cops and then the sequel, Police Cops in Space, although they are taking a third to the Edinburgh Festival this year. I saw them last year at Edinburgh and immediately bought a ticket to go and see them again as soon as I walked out of the venue. How can I put this? They are new. And as you might have read in the show notes for this episode, the accompanying notes, the concept of them would be easy to raise an eyebrow at, or not even raise an eyebrow, but for someone who's a seasoned comedy goer, you might think pastiches of action films done by 3 guys who met at drama school. It would be easy to overlook something like that at face value. I cannot stress enough how phenomenal their work is. I laughed and laughed and laughed. I've seen them 4 or 5 times now, and they've had standing ovations every time. You can feel people in the room becoming fans. You know, I'm fond of saying, I'm sure I've said this on the show before, if you really want to succeed in comedy, you need to be the sort of act that when people walk out of your venue, they're texting their friends going, holy shit, you've got to see this. Well, I texted several people after each performance that I saw by these guys. So I hope you enjoy this live conversation with Tom, Nathan and Zach, Police Cops.
Thank you so much for coming. I was saying to you before the show that you are the guests on the show about which I know the least. I normally do loads and loads of kind of forensic research and investigation. On this occasion, I have not done that. But what I have done is I've seen both of your shows, your current touring shows, twice at the Edinburgh Festival this year. And I felt like I had stumbled upon a thing that I had no idea what it was. I feel like I know what I'm talking about comedy-wise. And I walked into this huge room in the assembly rooms, and it was absolutely rammed with your adoring fans. And you came out, did a show, took the roof off it, and got a standing ovation. And then I ditched a ticket to come and see it again 2 nights later, and the same thing happened again. And I thought, fucking hell, who are you? And why don't I know who you are? So with those credentials established, can you tell the audience here and at home who you are and what you do?
Can we use that as a quote?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah.
A really long one, but a great one. We're just three mates, essentially, who met at drama school in 2014. I think, no, 2011. We graduated in 2014. Yeah. Went to East 15 Drama School in Debden, lovely Debden. And, we met up. We were on the same course together and started training together. And then we got put together in a group to do a physical comedy module that was part of our training. And then we made a little bit of Police Cops there. And then we kind of just bagged that and thought we want to do something with that when we finish. But it was just like a couple of scenes at that point. And then we got out and just started working together.
Well, no, we took about a year where we kind of tried to be actors, but it kind of went badly. Yeah.
You gave it a solid year.
Yeah. Well, I personally was just working in, you know, a call centre and kind of... We kind of did it because we were like, oh, there's that thing that we could do. Rather than like,
it's a good reason.
Rather than that,
yeah, just sort of a year of trying other things, and then we're like, maybe we should try it.
Okay, so what do you? When did you first start to feel like you had a hit on your hands? What was the reaction to it? Were people going nuts over it when you did little 10 minutes of it at drama school?
Yeah, they did. They did really like it, actually. Yeah, we got a really good response.
Actually, no one in our class liked it. No,
yeah, our class hated it. I think they were jealous. I think mainly.
That's what we told ourselves.
But also, I think it wasn't very funny back then. So I kind of don't blame them. Because when we look back on the old scripts of it, at the time I was like, oh, this is brilliant. Why is no one laughing? And then we look back at the scripts and they didn't have any jokes in it whatsoever. Mm. It was, you know how we do, a parody of a... the first show is just a parody of like a 1970s cop thing. And when we first did it, we just didn't put any jokes in it. We just did a 1970s cop thing.
It would have been a good movie if it was made in 1970.
Yeah, so... But it made us laugh. And, yeah.
That's what's most important.
So, yeah, when creating comedy.
Well, we realised that that's not actually true, but... Yeah.
Okay, so just describe it for people who haven't seen the show. And I feel like... And when I saw it 1.5 times here at the Vault Festival, where we're at the moment... And the last couple of nights. And again, I got that sense of I couldn't tell who in the room was already like a screaming fan of your stuff and who in the room was someone who had come in kind of not really knowing what it was and been completely converted. Because every time I've seen you, you've had standing ovations. It's like it's this really powerful thing. It's not... I'm keen for people listening to this not to think it's just a couple of guys from uni who threw a thing together. Mm. It's more than that. And I'm just... Before we get into why that is... Can you just describe it as a pastiche? What sort of thing do we see if we come and see it?
It's like basically what we tried to do is we tried to... Basically, we love action films and like seeing that the excitement in those things. So we wanted to do that in theatres. So we just basically thought like, oh, we want to have a fight scene. We want to have, you know, the montages, all that stuff. And try and make it as like action-packed as possible. So like every moment we could, we'd like utilise that to make it, you know, as enjoyable as possible. So it's kind of like trying to just, yeah, something weird want to watch, and that was, yeah.
We always said it was like trying to do an action movie on stage, or three idiots trying to do an action movie on stage. Yeah. That was like our way into it at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because we'd just come out of like a clowning thing at school where we were all just learning how to be idiots. We were already pretty...
We were good.
Yeah. We were very
naturally.
So we kind of brought that idea of what would these three guys who are trying to make a movie on stage, no budget, you know, have tried to get into Hollywood and haven't made it, and now they think that fringe theatre is the way to
do it.
Pretty
close to the truth.
It's also like we wanted to go at it from a point of view of people who don't really know what theatre is and have just seen films,
yes,
and just is like, let's just do that.
Mm. That's an interesting kind of a starting point. So people who don't know what theatre is, that's because that's very clowny, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
So
yeah.
What sort of, like, who was teaching you clown? Was it a particular...
Uri Rudner.
Okay. And do you have an idea of what clown... Could you describe what clown means? A lot of people would hear that and think, oh, it's, you know, kind of red-nosed circus clown. Obviously, it's becoming more of a thing in comedy now that loads and loads of stand-ups and sketch people are really inspired by people who've gone to train at Ecole Philippe Goliath in Paris and then kind of brought this kind of clown movement over. I've always found clowning to be incredibly difficult. So what qualities do you think that you were good at being an idiot?
I'm just really aggressive. I'm just like really, I just shout a lot and get really angry and then look stupid because, I don't know. I think it's literally, I just sort of personify my dad, I think. He used to do that, and I just thought you look really like dumb as you do it. And I've kind of got that.
No, you didn't think about it.
Not consciously. I think I'm just saying I'm my father's son. Like I am just an idiot when I'm angry. So I think that's just what I'm like. And then I don't know what my point is here. So I think I just do that. I just get angry. And that's what clown is, getting angry. No, it's like your relationship with the audience, and for them, you to be very open to them like seeing you be in the shit, basically, like not knowing what to do on stage and trying to entertain people. And I think that was my out, was like, oh, I'll do this, and then you kind of just go for it, and then you find certain traits that are like your natural thing, and it's like your natural person.
Okay.
I think for us it was like the it's like the idiots who really want the audience to be having the best time and be really entertaining the entire time and keep their attention. And I think that's kind of one of the elements that we held on to and brought into making the show.
So would you agree with that as kind of co-performers? Would you agree that Tom is like the angry clown? Because I think it's probably more useful. It might be interesting to think what do you think each other's clown is?
Well, weirdly, when we studied clowning at drama school, I thought I was quite rubbish. I think me and you weren't
I
very
was,
good at it.
No, yeah. I was actually terrible.
Tom was good at it.
Tom was good.
It's brilliant.
I didn't really understand it because I think I really liked comedy acting. So I was like, oh, I'm going to be really good at this. And then it started and I don't think I was that good at it because I think I tried to plan everything in my head of, oh, I'm going to do this tomorrow or like, I'm going to do this kind of character or... And I didn't really, I still don't really know how to do it that well, really.
It was difficult because our teacher came in a character himself and didn't actually explain anything about what we were doing.
Yeah.
But he was just this kind of, like, fascist dictator-style kind of clown who would just hit us with shoes.
Yeah.
And,
I didn't know what was going on.
I don't want to make him sound bad. It was a lot of people took to it and it worked. But for me, I think for me and Zach, we were a bit confused. But maybe, but Tom liked the shoes.
Yeah, I liked it. It made a lot of sense. I find it hard to overthink things. So,
what do you think kind of what is the funniest self of each of your co-performers? Because, I mean, I've got an idea about like what I think each of you brings to the dynamic, brings to the threesome. Well, yeah, absolutely. I think, for example, I think Nathan, you have that kind of when you do the Mexican character. Do you know what I mean? You really get involved in kind of sexy, kind of pelvic. Do you know what I mean? Like that's you're like you're kind of like you're a clown who's kind of trying to fuck us.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, totally, right. And a defining moment, I think, for Zach is certainly in the first one, when the first moment you tear your shirt off. Which was very early on, and we realised that, to our arguable surprise, you are unbelievably muscular. Like, that moment, suddenly, you can feel the audience go, "What the fuck?" But what's lovely about that is we see how much you enjoy having impressed everyone with how muscular you are, and it just sets this incredible tone where we're like, not only can anything happen, but like the amount of pleasure that you all have in the thing you're doing, that's like a really that's a solid base for clowning, I would say.
We are really lucky that it's like we work well together, but we also just enjoy the work as we're doing it, you know, which is kind of, I think that's very lucky. So just want to tell you guys.
But
that.
I feel like we don't really, I mean,
I'm just going to disagree with them.
No, I'm just saying, I feel like we're talking about clowning right now, but I don't really still really know what it is. And, I think
it's like where it started from, but it's not actually what we do.
Yeah,
we don't go into a room and then like try and like make it.
And I think some people have said it is kind of like clowning, but I don't know why or really how to do clowning.
Yeah.
That sounds weird, but do you know what I mean?
No, that's an incredibly honest appraisal of where you find yourself.
I think honestly, like in our second show, Police Cops in Space, like Tom used clown. There was an actual character from clowning that Tom had used that we basically just made the bad guy was Tom's clown. because it works so well. So I think for Tom especially, he's like got that clown intuition. But I think for me and Zach, it's a little bit different. But it was a good starting place for us all to go into the work, yeah.
So just to talk about the first show. So it's a melodrama. It's got a structure. It's got a storyline, sort of a very pastiche-heavy, spoof-based storyline. How do you go about creating that? Did you sort of build it in? I mean, we were talking before that people have asked you if you did that stand-up circuit thing of like doing 10 minutes in a club and that you didn't do it like that. How did you build it from scratch?
We just got put in a group together. It's quite boring. We just got put in a group together in drama school, and we were doing the clowning thing, and they just said, go make a little scene. And so we was like, oh, should we just do like a scene from an action movie? And it was if any of you have seen the show, it was the scene where my character meets Tom, the young rookie cop meets the old grizzled guy in the bar and asks if and Nathan was the barman. And yeah, we just did that. And then we were like, oh, that was really fun. Let's work on it more. Mm.
Did you then go from that to booking an hour and having to fill it? How much of the show is written? How much of it only exists in your head?
So it was like, we did that scene and then we took it back to our class, who obviously didn't laugh, as we said before, but our teacher saw something in it.
We couldn't get through it because me and Tom were laughing.
Well, you guys were laughing the entire time.
That's a really genuine thing, by the way. People always think that we're like putting it on, but like me and Zach have this thing. We've always had it where we like find each other really fun. Like we just corpse loads at each other.
Well, I do something
for the record.
Something I really respected about the show is that having seen it multiple times, you're not fake corpsing.
No, not
there's
at all.
So much
not
of that in kind of sketch comedy. Sometimes you're trying to make each other laugh, but you can tell there are bits where you're trying to make each other laugh by saying something new this time.
I think we learned that kind of the hard way, because I think at one point when we were doing it our second year of Edinburgh, we kind of maybe started to enjoy the corpsing a bit too much. And I think we just took it a bit too far, and
we allowed ourselves to laugh the entire time.
We can look back at that now and be like, oh, that was kind of rubbish. And a few reviewers called us up on it and was like, oh, didn't like the show because of it. And I think it was a bit much. And then kind of we realised the hard way maybe that actually you need to really be trying really hard not to laugh.
Yeah.
And that's the only way it
works. It's in the tension, isn't it? When you're like trying, you can tell that the person doesn't want to laugh, but they just can't help it. That's where it kind of works, I think.
Yeah, that was very heavy, wasn't it?
Not at all. I think that's really interesting, and the fact that it is in the tension. The shows are so tight and so kind of balletic from one minute to the next. So let's just go back to this. I interrupted you with that question about how you get it from the 5 minutes that you started off with to an hour.
Yeah, so we did that bar scene, and then the teacher was like, yeah, go make some more.
sure.
Go with it. So we did like four scenes, I think, like a beginning of a movie, and then two scenes that could be somewhere in the middle, and then a final end. And then we did that kind of 20-minute version of the show for our year and our school. And then, so that's what we had when we left drama school.
They laugh that time?
They did laugh that time. I mean, they laugh at anything at drama school. I think they laughed at just us wearing wigs, just because, you know, or flares.
They laugh because we were their friends.
Yeah.
And they're on stage. But I think it was, I think also, I don't know why I'm going to say this, but we had maybe more of a similar sense of humour to the other people who were in the school rather than just our class. But even though we really got on with everyone in our class, but
we're really slating them, but they're nice.
Yeah.
So how do you get from that 20? Is it just a case of just coming up with stuff and doing it? Because I just can't. I suppose I can't articulate enough how much the shows are just a barrage of jokes, of like a sight gag and a visual joke and a costume joke and this incredible bit of choreography. And I just was in pieces the whole time. And you can feel that energy behind it. And I feel it's sort of interesting because at the moment you're so downplaying what you're doing. Like, we just sort of did this thing. But I really want to get into the minutiae of how you how you made it that good.
We like, take a long time. It takes us a really, really long time. So we draft it and redraft it and redraft it and get it up on its feet.
In a script format. You sit and write the script first. So
I improv the
script. But also when we're doing that, it takes us so long because I think we just try and really... I don't know, we just...
We labour over every line.
We spend about 20 minutes or half an hour on each line. And then we're just like, oh, let's just make it not funny. And then we move on to the next line and then spend about half an hour on that line. And it just takes us ages. And I think there must be a better way of doing it, but...
We haven't found it yet.
Yeah.
No. And are you all walking around a room as you're doing this? Is one person typing? What does it look like in the room?
Well, a lot of the time, because there's three of us, like, a lot of the time we'll... A lot of the scenes are constructed with two people in the scene and then one person will be sitting there and kind of directing. We've got like a rolling director kind of thing. Okay. So if Tom and Zach are out there, I'll be sitting there watching it and seeing what comes to me from the outside and then vice versa. So, and then when there's three of us on stage, sometimes we like record it with an iPad and then watch it back afterwards, or we get like a friend in who we trust who kind of gives us a little bit of advice down the road.
But I think because we're just making our third show, we still haven't really figured all this out ourselves. So it's kind of hard. I mean, because the first show and the second show was so different in terms of the first show we made and it was easy, wasn't it?
It felt like everything naturally fell into place.
And then the second show was so hard. It took us a year. We made a show, showed it, didn't like it, changed it completely.
We scrapped the whole thing apart from one.
Didn't really like it and spent the next year changing it while we were touring it and... the third one seems to be a mixture of the two, hopefully.
Making the second show was mental. Because we started making it in September after we finished Edinburgh with the first show, and we had till August to make it for Edinburgh, and we made a show up until July, and then we performed that and realized that it wasn't very good in lots of different ways. And we had like 3 weeks to completely make a show. And we just went crazy.
So you ditched everything you had?
We ditched everything except one scene.
What was the
scene where I'm in a thong and we do the little like...
Couldn't get rid of that.
That bit. Where it's like a...
Terminator thing.
There we go.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Because that bit is very much out of the rest of it. That's really interesting that it'd be that one.
Yeah,
that's a real abrupt change of tone.
Yeah, we shoehorned it in because we liked it so much.
Okay, so you scrapped everything else with 3 weeks to go.
Yeah, and then we did like 14-hour days. And
then I sprained my ankle as well while we were doing it as well. It was so stressful. It was horrible. And afterwards I was like, I never want to make another show ever again. I hate it.
And so what was the reaction at the time? Was it when you took that show, when you had like night one of that second show at Edinburgh, did you know that it was going to be good? Did you believe in it there? Did you go, we've done all the long days and this is going to work?
We didn't like it.
I just left the theatre straight away and just walked home and was just like, that sucked.
Yeah.
I was just like...
We're definitely our harshest critics, but it was like a crap version of the show that was eventually good. But it was a crap version, we think.
Yeah.
And so have some sort of driving... Have you got maybe not a master plan, but have you got like a driving ambition for the work that you do as a three that gets you through moments like that? Like what? How does the personal dynamics of it work when you've, you know, gone on and sucked? Like, who does one of you look after the others? Do you try and sort of cheer each other up? Is one of you responsible for morale?
When was Tom just lying under that flag in the rehearsal room and just couldn't...
That was the first show.
Was that the first show?
Maybe it couldn't have been that.
You were just... Tom was a mess.
Yeah, I got really, really stressed and was like... I don't know what it was. I got so stressed and then...
He was so sad, he was almost crying, so we just put a flag over his head and let him do whatever he wanted underneath the flag.
But it worked quite well, the flag.
It did. That's a good tip.
So I guess the question is if it was going badly, why did we sort of carry on and make it work? I don't know, really.
I think we'd invested so much into it at that point. We know, I don't think we thought this is crap, we're rubbish, this is never going to work. I think from being at drama school and stuff like that, there's so many things you make and so many shows you make, and they're not good at all, like a lot of the time, and it's part of the experience and the learning process. And I think none of us, well, personally, I wasn't like, oh, this sucks, we can't do this, we need to just get out of this. I think we all saw that there was still a lot of potential there, within even within the show, because it was a crap version of a show that would eventually be good. And yeah, so I think we all just kept in it because we knew that it could be good.
Another thing that happens to us is because we think so much of like film, it's like we write jokes that would work on screen and then we try to do them on stage, and that's kind of like, sometimes that's really powerful and it works really well, and then sometimes it just doesn't work. It's like, oh, on screen you'd be able to cut to that person's face and then you'd understand that joke.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
And then yeah, it's like, yeah. Well, can you give us an example? Can you give us an example of something, of like a moment like that was a good joke that you had to cut because you couldn't do a...
Well, that whole... Pretty much the whole... You know, we were saying we made a show and then had to sort of... That whole show was that, pretty much. And there were too many weird... It was like... I could really imagine it in my head as a film. Mm. But then on stage, it just didn't work. Things like going to see the underground human settlement and there being... And then there was just so many... It was so convoluted and, yeah.
Whereas you'd be able to, like, tell the story through pictures. In our head, the pictures were so clear, but obviously an audience were like, what, so you're now an alien? Or are you a human? Or are you...
Okay. Yeah, we had, like a whole alien... We had, like, aliens, robots, and humans... And then we had like robots disguised as aliens, disguised as humans and stuff like that, with just like an antenna on our head and a swimming cap. And it was just so...
The worst thing about it was in the preview, you kept getting confused and saying you were an alien and you were a robot.
Tom played a robot.
And then everyone was really confused.
I said, I'm an alien.
I mean, robot.
I mean robot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it was good. Just you got...
Yeah,
your
I just
wrong.
Messed it up. It was fine. All that work we did for no reason.
Yeah. And have you been surprised by the reaction to it? Like, was that when I saw you in Edinburgh this year, was that the biggest room you've done in Edinburgh? Like, how many festivals
have
you
done?
Yeah,
that was the biggest.
Because I just couldn't believe how, like, the queue around the block, the excitement in the queue. Mm. Like, talk to us about that feeling that you're onto something when people actually start buying tickets. Because I think there'll be a lot of people maybe listening to this who are in their last year of drama school and thinking, I want to get together with a couple of mates and make this work. Mm. And most times when that happens, I think it fails. But this is really taken off. So when did you first get a sense that, hang on a minute, we're selling tickets?
We did like a 20 minutes like of it when we left. After we've all been like working at schools and stuff, and we did like 20 minutes and we won like this award for it, and people were going mad for it, and we were like, oh, that's weird. But the consensus was kind of like, that was really good, but it was good because it was 20 minutes. You'll never be able to turn this into an hour.
Okay.
And everyone kept saying that, so we had that as like a, well, fuck you, we're gonna try and make it an hour kind of thing.
When we did that 20 minutes and it went well, that was definitely the best. I think we've all said at different times that was the best like moment of everything. It was better than selling out the Edinburgh and it going amazingly and getting standing ovations. Just that 20 minutes, we were just like, oh, okay, this must be good. We had no idea.
And so it was relief that people agreed with how good you thought it was.
We were all just so happy and just like, oh, this is brilliant.
Yeah. Because we already knew that we didn't have another option as well. You know, we'd exhausted the possibility of being actors, so that was... So we did that and then went to Edinburgh in a tiny little room in like a theatre that's Zoo, which is basically mainly dance stuff. So I don't know why we were there, but we went in a little room there.
Was anyone producing you, or were you producing it yourself?
No, Nathan, I do it all.
So you put it in a dance venue not realising it was a dance venue?
Well, that was Tom and Zach were doing a show in that venue the year previous when we first came out of drama school. And me and Zach were also doing a show in that venue. So they knew us quite well. But we were really, really badly organised.
We had to pretend to be that theatre. Basically, so we took our final shows from the drama school we were at up to Edinburgh after we finished. And then, so we were so late, we had to pretend to be that theatre company again so they would let us in.
Because they knew us from the year before, so they're like, oh, okay, we'll have these guys back. We know them. They're nice. So because me and Zach were in that show with other people, we just pretended we were that company and just wrote that on our application. And they said, okay, you can come then, seeing as you're those guys and, you know, you were nice. And then we got there and we were still really, really badly organised. We had no idea what we were doing. We were running all our sound off of a
CD,
with a stereo, which is really old school and not how anyone really does it anymore. And I think loads of things just kept going wrong. Like, and then
I cried after the first show. Tech went so bad. It just went so bad. But it ended up being really good.
There was one show where like the laptop died. And someone had to come through. The only exits were like the back of the stage. So someone had to come through, like through a scene with a laptop, and it was ridiculous. We're just doing a scene with like no sound, and then that happened. And loads of things went wrong. I hit my head really, really hard, and thought I was concussed on the side
of the
stage.
Still are, aren't you?
Yeah, a little bit. But that was a really fun room, and it was like really, it was like 50 people and really low ceilings, and just felt like a sort of sweat box, and we literally were hitting people with sweat off of our bodies and stuff. Yeah. I think people really enjoyed
4D.
That.
Yeah, there's definitely something positive about that, isn't there? So was there a sense of discovery? Did you start to feel like you had fans?
Yeah, because we started selling quite well. I think we had we were selling like 3/4 of the room, and it was the first time we'd ever done something as a three. So that was in a 60-seater. So that was going pretty well. And then we got our first review from the stage, and it was a really good review. And we were just like, I remember I was with you, Tom, and we saw it at the same time. We like almost fainted. And then we won the stage award when we were there that year. So
people were like quoting the show afterwards and stuff and things like that.
Shouting police cops at us as we go down the street and all that. Yeah. So mini celebrities for 3 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, are you aware of kind of like, that's a real value to have people shout your catchphrases at you in the street.
That's why we changed our name.
Oh yeah. So you were a theatre company called The Pretend Men.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you've changed it because everyone knows you as police cops.
Yeah. People just go the police cop boys. So we just went, well, let's call ourselves police cops.
Yeah. You go, hi, I'm contacting you from The Pretend Men. They'll be like, who's that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, okay.
Well, police cops guys. Oh, yeah, police cops, cool.
Yeah, yeah. And was it a conscious decision? Like, were you in the theatre programme at Edinburgh rather than the comedy programme?
Yeah, for the first 2 years?
No, just the first year.
Just the first year.
Yeah, and then we went into comedy. But we've got like this weird thing where we like bridge. But we're kind of not accepted in either party now. It's kind of like...
That sentence took a 180. We really bridge, actually, neither party. Like, yeah.
Come to think of it, no. We kind of sit outside of theatre now. Like, when the first year we went up, Lynn Gardner came up to us and basically said, oh, you're not... We were like, oh, can you write us a review? And she's like, well, I don't really think you're theatre. And she was really lovely about it, but she just was like, well, you know... But actually, she said it wasn't her kind of thing. So
that thing you think you are, you're not that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So fuck her. No, that's why she got dropped. We went for the comedy thing, and I think that helped sales and like loads of other things. Like I think there's like, luckily we get people from both audiences, but we're not really accepted in either thing, and because we can't do like a 10-minute, like we were saying, like we can't do like a 10-minute. Like bit, because people are like, what the hell is this? Like, you've got no context of who these characters are, or like, what's good?
We have done it.
Yeah. Surely you could cut 10 minutes out of that. Surely you could.
It doesn't work as well as you might think.
Okay. Mm. Because it's too confusing? Or...
Yeah. Oh, surely, no, we did that little thing where I'm in the thong. We did that on the street in Brighton, and it went down really well. That's the only time it's really gone well.
Well, we did. Last year in Edinburgh, we won one of the Amuse Moose awards, and before it, we had to do 10 minutes of the show, and none of the audience laughed. And then we won the thing, and then the woman had to come on stage and be like, "By the way, she was doing a speech in front of us about why the show is actually good," and it was really funny because. Yeah, just 10 minutes of a show where I don't think none of them knew who these characters were or anything, and we were saying lines that you need to know.
Callbacks to jokes you haven't done. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's the plan for the future? I know you're creating a third one at the moment. Mm. How far through the development of that are you?
It's hard to say because obviously, as we were saying, we spend so much time writing a scene and then we might come back in, like we really like to kind of like sleep on it and then come back and be like, oh, actually, no. So we think we're like maybe a quarter.
Yeah, yeah. We're doing between 20 and 30 minutes here in March 15th. So we're getting ready for that basically. So we've got, we've got like around 15, 20 minutes and then we're just going to make it a little bit longer, a lot better. And go from there.
We've also done Police Cops. We've changed it into a TV pilot, where we've managed to use a lot of our jokes that we couldn't use for theatre and stuff. And writing that was really nice as well, because there's just so many new ideas that we could have that we could never do, like characters that are actually ducks and things like that, where we could never actually have that in the thing.
And are you able to preserve what's good about the live experience and put that in the TV pilot? Because I think we've seen with acts like, I don't know if you've seen We Are Clang, that Greg Davies and Marek Larwood, Steve Hall used to do, and then Pappy's following them. People who've kind of done sort of, you think of them as kind of sweaty sketch groups, you know, people where it's like the crap jokes are deliberately crap, the crap props are deliberately crap, because it sets up a certain expectation in the room. They're focused on the relationship with the audience, as you guys are a lot. And then the difficulty, the challenge in making that into a functioning TV pilot, to really keep hold of that, you know, that special thing you've got. Yeah. How have you found that in the writing?
Well, we don't know really yet. We'll see if it ever comes out. But I think we just trust ourselves as writers, and kind of as we were writing it, we maybe realised that maybe we are more suited to that than theatre anyway. So, I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, it's hard. It could go either way. Like we also like look up to like Mighty Boosh and like Garth Marenghi and stuff like that, and have seen how that can like work going from stage to TV. And like, yeah, there's a bit of a obviously like intuitive, just is that going to work, is it not, and it will probably just come down to when it happens. We'll hopefully be able to work on our feet with it as well a bit, and like be involved in the creative process of making it, and say that doesn't work, we need to get rid of that and we need to put something else in and do it.
It's weird though, because like when you take a script that's got all these like ridiculous like montages and action sequences, and you're like, yeah, we just want to do that, and they're like, well, you can't have, you know, haven't been like 30 million to make that or whatever it is. Yeah. So it's like, you know, you have to, if it does get made, there'll have to be a compromise on like how we try and work that out. But also maybe that will be fun.
But we have kept live elements in it. Like there's multi-rolling and there's like dance routines and stuff like that. So it does, I think it will keep the...
Where do the dance routines come from in the show? Because that's one of the things I describe when I describe the shows to people is, and then out of nowhere, there's some incredible, like your stagecraft is really good. There's all these, not, I don't mean the stagecraft, I mean the choreography. There's all these oblique angles where, you know, instead of a montage, it will become a dance piece. So is one of you a dancer, or have you been directed by a dancer?
No.
We did dance classes at drama school, but I found it a bit embarrassing, to be honest. Mainly because I was like 19 years old and I'd just gone to drama school and I was like...
You had to wear leggings.
Yeah, but
savage.
He says wearing leggings.
Yeah, basically.
Out of choice.
So I don't know why we...
I think it was because of the... I think it was something to do with being inspired by the 70s and 80s thing. There was something about that kind of brash, in-your-face, homoerotic, kind of campy stuff that kind of worked its way into it. I don't know. I think it was also like an interesting way to do transitions and sort of like go from one place to the next. We kind of started thinking... Dancing.
We've realised a lot of stuff we make actually we make because we make a transition and then it ends up being really long.
Yeah, and then that's a whole section.
Yeah.
And that's a really good solution to how do you do a montage on stage. A dance is sort of effectively a theatrical way of doing that. Mm. So which are your most, which bits do you get most pleasure out of performing? Which are your, in the first show, which are your, individually, which are your favourite bits to do? Which do you think really kind of typified, that's exactly what I want to
do? The bits that are my favourite are when I'm not doing anything and when I'm just sitting in a chair and watching the back of Tom, usually, as he stood in front of me improvising, and I can just see the audience, I can see the fear somehow in the back of his head, and I can see the strange erratic pacing that
you can
he
see
kind
that
of
he walks
does.
Forwards and backwards.
He walks like in a little cube. We've actually never told Tom this.
I walk in a cube.
Yeah. You walk in like you a four like point kind of, yeah, that's it.
I didn't know that.
Sometimes it's really wide, like
really
that.
Wide.
And is there a relationship between how scared he is and the width of the cube?
Yeah.
So when we do our Wild West thing, he'll be brilliant.
No one's laughing. It's really wide. Which is never.
Yeah. It's weird that you'd want to open your legs when you're more nervous.
Going more vulnerable. Yeah.
More vulnerable. Like,
I feel like we should introduce some strand to the interview now, which is any two of you describe what the other one does that they don't know they do on stage. Is there an equivalent thing?
There must be so many.
Zach does lots of things with his hands that he doesn't fully... I remember when we first watched it back and we were doing the walking kind of stuff and your hands were kind of flowing much more than you
I
thought.
I try and make up for... If I'm walking along, I go like that. Just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Zach does this thing with his feet as well where he like kind of like stamps out the lines.
Okay.
And he does it like that. Yesterday you got up like this and you left your leg like this for ages. And you got up and it was like really exaggerated. It was just weird. Yeah. Yeah.
What's Nathan do?
I'm in perfect control.
Nathan doesn't do anything funny, unfortunately.
Nathan's trousers go a weird colour.
Oh, why have you brought that up?
Because it's the only thing that I can genuinely think that does happen to me that I can't control.
Your trousers go a weird colour.
I wear very tight, white...
Trousers.
Long johns that ride very far up the never crevices. And then I'm sweating a lot and, you know...
There's different theories as to why there is...
I think it's just brown sweat, personally.
Nathan says it's because he sweats from his bum hole.
I do. His bum hole is what it is.
Tom says that it's because Nathan doesn't wipe his bum properly.
Definitely not true. They've said to get nappies and stuff to wear on stage.
I bought wet wipes.
Wet wipes.
And didn't work. Didn't work. He used them and it just didn't work.
No further questions.
No.
In terms of the bits you enjoy doing, so you were talking about seeing that, like, is that you enjoy that because you are seeing the audience enjoy your friend improvise, or you're seeing, aware of how much fear there is in him genuinely throwing himself into it?
I just like Tom being scared.
Because I think it would be easy to fake some of the improv, you know, but you're not faking it. Like when I can't remember an example, the bit with the goats, you know, the goats' bums and stuff, you know, or behaving like a little egg.
It's always eggs.
Sounds so weird out of context, doesn't it? Behaving like a little egg.
I've got this real habit of going, like, I have to keep breaking. The guys have to say when I'm like, I get stuck on one of the, like, I have a go to, like, I'll always say porcupine. Chocolate cheese men was a massive thing for a while. And I go through stages.
Hopscotch
was a thing. Horse boxes.
So you're trying to make yourself improvise afresh, but you fall back into those things.
It's like when my mind goes blank, I go to horse box. And I don't know why. And it's really, it's bizarre.
So what are your most enjoyable bits of the show? Or which are your favourite jokes? Or jokes that you're most proud of? Ones that you think, that's the one.
The last, I think, because we were getting better and better at writing just from the experience and the practice of doing it, I think the last scene has like some of the best, personally, has some of the best jokes in it.
Of the first show.
Right. Oh, yeah. The Bulletproof Vest.
Yeah, I like the Bulletproof Vest. That's my favourite.
Bulletproof Vest and the bullets.
I don't want to spoil that on your account, but by all means, you can tell us what it is so that we can discuss that joke.
It's that he's put, instead of wearing a bulletproof vest, he's put little bulletproof vests on the other guy's bullets. That's it.
Although, the last two nights, I've just said, he said, how are you alive? You're alive. And I'm like, bulletproof vest. And that's been getting a laugh, which I think...
No, it's because you're not wearing a
It's because you're not wearing an
So clearly.
That always gets a laugh.
I thought... I thought
that is
it
a
was
joke that we wrote.
I thought no, but it's got more of a laugh. And I thought it's because maybe I'm a bit chubbier than these two. That's what I thought it was. I was like,
it's not that, mate.
No, all right.
I mean, you are.
Yeah, undoubtedly, obviously. Yeah,
that happens so often. You'll be like, is that a joke? And we're like, yeah, it's a joke. We wrote that.
Maybe that's why there are so many jokes, because that makes no sense. In my head, it makes sense.
So is one of you, do you have particular... Oh, sorry, I didn't ask Zach. What's your favourite bit to do?
I like it when we've had it a few times where we've performed to people who... There's like in a rural place... And there's no one there, and no one's laughing.
And no one's there, and they're still not laughing.
to try and make them laugh, we try really hard, and it's really embarrassing, and then we laugh at the stupid things we did afterwards.
We once performed it, and there was not one laugh the entire show.
It was funny. And we did it in like 45, 50 minutes, because it was just like all that time where you'd normally get laughs just wasn't there. So
and
just
now
like
I stand proudly for 5 seconds taking the laugh on the show.
We did it in Poland, in Warsaw, and we did it to loads of school kids. Obviously, you had kind of like a broken understanding of English. I don't know if you can use it in that way, but they, so we had to like really gesticulate everything we were doing, and that was really funny because you'd be like, I'm crazy. Like everything was really, really big. And Zach forgot the harmonica at the start and had to improvise. But usually he goes, oh, Gibson harmonicas, blah, blah, blah. But all he had was a hat. So he had to be like, oh, this old hat. I love it.
So the scene started with me on stage hugging a hat instead of playing a harmonica.
Yeah.
Why is it when you have those that gig where no one laughs? Like, I think any comic, anyone working in comedy at all can relate to some shows like that where it's just nothing. And I suppose you think to yourself, what is the what's like? There's something about the contract that you haven't established with the audience. Like, there's something whereby you've started and they think it's a serious play, and there's no way to tell them.
Yeah. I think that has happened a few times because our first scene takes a little while to, because it is very just typical rather than joke laden. Yeah. So it's just, they don't quite understand that it is a thing. But usually people do jump on board by the end of the first scene. But yeah. I
had a few weird ones where, yeah. Where...
Yeah.
We performed in America and for one thing, we were at a place where, like, everyone just seemed to be ancient. There were, like, 90-year-old women falling asleep in the front row, and, like, everyone was just super old, and I'd, like, wake them up by screaming at them in certain bits and things. And, like, that was really weird. I don't think a lot of them got it.
And what were you doing in America performing your show, which is a massive piss take of America? Because there's a huge amount of, like, flag waving, and... Did they go for it, or did they just take it at face value?
They were asleep.
Yeah,
they're 90. But the ones who did stay awake,
Canada, we did it in Canada. They loved it.
They really liked it.
And in America, I think people liked it. But we, as Tom said, we were in maybe the wrong venue for us, because it was a lot of old people who, I don't know, yeah,
sleepy.
Yeah, yeah, who fell sleepy asleep. People.
So underpinning all of this is your, like, are you intending to? Are you auditioning for other jobs, for other acting jobs, whilst you're doing this? Or have you sacked that off in favour of committing to this?
We're open to it if someone calls us, but until then... No, we don't really have much time, do we, really? Like, yeah, this is pretty much full time. Because it takes us quite a long time to make a show, and when we do, we want to get it really good.
And is it supporting you? Is it? Because, I mean, that's the other thing, working with three people, you've got to split the money three ways.
Just about.
Yeah.
It's not really luxurious.
Yeah, we just about pull it off, I reckon. Yeah, we got to like a place where we were self-sufficient with it, like about a year ago, year and a half ago. Yeah, so yeah, that's just about doing it.
And is there, beyond the TV show, obviously we're the pilot to work out and get a series out of that, is there a kind of a live performance goal? Is there like a particular room you want to play, or is there, are you sort of thinking through, if you think of like the next 5 years, have one of you or all of you got a kind of a game plan for what you're going to do? Because it seems like the work has managed to get such a reaction, and you've efficiently managed to capitalize on that and travel and tour and keep going back and retain that audience. Is there a game plan for the next 5 or 10 years of building on that? Or are you just kind of blagging it from year to year?
We really want to go to... We really want to have a West End run in a... Yeah, in like a small West End theatre for however long. That's what we would really like.
Make the show like longer.
And yeah, make...
You know.
Yeah.
But we're waiting for it to be the kind of right show. Because at the moment, we're just getting inspired by whatever... Just whatever makes us laugh and is gets us all kind of excited. If there's an idea, we'll usually just go with it, regardless of its kind of marketability or like whether it could go to a bigger stage and stuff like that.
Okay.
So it's kind of at the moment, like there is obviously two kind of simultaneous things you have to think about to some extent, but we're always on that kind of what's going to be the fun, most fun for us to create and perform. And that's going to be have the most fun effect for the audience. Essentially, it's going to be the better show. So it's kind of like if something happens where we have that the right idea that could work for it, then we'll try and push it in that direction. I think
we just need a play that goes wrong just to stop. And when that happens, then we'll jump in.
Or maybe they've. I mean, yeah,
the play that goes really wrong.
Yeah,
we'll
work. Yeah,
yeah. I'm just wondering whether that kind of thing has sort of laid the groundwork for. You know, that might be useful to you in a way that you could say, look, this works. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Like, that's kind of... No, I'm joking.
No.
Sorry.
Yeah, they've shown, like, they've done brilliantly, haven't they? Like, those guys.
They started in a similar sort of theatrical background. I don't know much about those.
Yeah, they went to drama school and stuff, I think.
And then they went up to Edinburgh and they just kept... I think they went up to Edinburgh quite a few times. And
Yeah. That's the other thing that we've learned a little bit as well, is that sometimes, like, when we first went to Edinburgh, there was very much a, like, you do your show, you do it for a few weeks, and then you're out, and you go, and you leave it alone, you start making your new one. But, like, there was a few times when we went up to Edinburgh with a show, with like, Police Corps in Space, for example, we took it up the first time, and it went okay, but it wasn't amazing, but we still thought there was more that could be done with this show. So we kind of went away and worked on it more and got it better and toured it around to loads of different places and then did it again. And then that year ended up being really, really good. And we won the Amuse Moose Award, like Zach said earlier. So, like, yeah, there's something in kind of for us definitely in kind of really milking the work and not just dropping it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's as any comic who's turning over a different hour every year, whenever you see someone, you're really jealous of other comics who are like, this show was so successful, not enough people saw it, and it can come back and have another life.
At first, I was a bit embarrassed about milking the shows and doing them over and doing, because we just kept doing it and like, I felt a little bit, I just kept making self-deprecating jokes in front of people, being like, oh, yeah, we're doing that again. Really milky, yeah. But now I'm realised that I'm actually happy to...
Maybe if we didn't use the phrase milking the shows, it might be less embarrassing.
You know what I mean when I say milking the shows?
Yeah.
I'm not going to try and explain it.
Sure, but yeah, so you felt a certain pressure to be coming up with something new instead. But actually, you're more comfortable now with the idea that that show has value and it can continue to build on that audience.
Yeah.
Whilst making... I mean, we're always interested in making new things as well. But, yeah. It just seemed like there was a thing where people do a new show all the time. And, I mean, they don't really do that on West End, do they? They do one show for, like, a year and then it comes back again. I mean, how long's The Lion King been on?
Lame is.
Exactly.
It's just like there was just something like where we did it and it felt like that was so much work and there feels like there's so much here and then it's just done and it just feels like why should it be done? You know, there's so many different places you can go to and do it and introduce new audiences and get so many more opportunities. That's like when some people when some younger like graduates or whatever say to me like what are you thinking like with my show? I'd be like, if you really think it's good and you think there's something there, don't just drop it and just go to another one. Really get it out there.
Mm. And are there other kind of strategic things you're doing in terms of how you develop your fan base? Because I mean, is it just a case of going up there, going to the festival and just trying to sell a bunch of tickets, or are you kind of connecting to the fans somehow, or like keeping emails, or? Do you know what I mean? Trying to build a fan base?
Yeah, we try and do a mailing list. Well, we've started doing that recently. And we do, like, Instagram and Twitter and stuff. And try and do that. as much as possible, really, whenever we remember.
But it's mostly just the quality of the work that...
It's mostly just word of mouth, I think, yeah. And just touring it, like, we try and... If we can do it, we'll always try and do it, kind of thing. Even, like, just wherever it is or whatever the fee is, we'll just try and do it. My agent won't be happy. Our agent won't be happy us saying that.
Yeah. Now we'll available for bookings what. Anywhere yeah. for pence.
The other weird thing with our show is, like, people seem to come multiple times and they, like, they'll come and they'll, like, bring a friend, and then they'll come again and bring, like, a different friend. And it's, like, a really weird... I don't really get it. I don't know why you'd want to see it over and over again.
Speaking as one of those people.
Yeah, sorry.
Like, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's interesting to me that you don't understand why people want to do that. I'm interested in, like, what... I know you've just said you don't know why that is. Of the other two of you, got any idea of why that is? Like, what is it that particularly generates... I was sat in that room two nights ago thinking... They are just turning punters into fans. Like, people were nuts about it. Like, do you get why that is? Is it just that it's funny, or is there something else going on? Have you got any notion of why that is?
I think it might be because, this is one reason. I think it's because people see it maybe in Edinburgh, and then their family comes to visit, like their mum and dad, and it's quite a family-friendly show, and I think they can bring people to it and know that they're not going to feel uncomfortable, because we don't really do very... I don't think we do very risque comedy, or... And I think... Yeah, so I think some of it's that.
I think some of it is also, like... When we said before that we try and make it like a movie, you know, and there's that real sense of escapism about a movie, and, like, in, you know, we really try and fight for it to be engaging the entire time and not let the audience focus kind of drop or mind wander or think, like, oh, how long is this going to last, kind of thing. We try to do that anyway. But, you know, that, I think that kind of contributes to this sense of just being lost in it, kind of time flying a bit more, and then and just having a good time.
I think that's right. I feel like the show explodes every 2 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I understand it, because I've seen The Woman in Black on the West End 7 times. I keep going back. I don't know why. I love it. I'm like that. If I find something I like, I see it loads and loads of times. So I get that. Because I don't really like taking that much of a chance on things, because I don't really like seeing something that I don't enjoy that much. So
I love it.
No, but I really hate it.
Yeah, you really hate it.
It's a bad person to go to a show with, because you kind of sit next to him and you're like, oh no. If the first few minutes you're like, oh dear, he's hating this.
I find I'm just a bit more interested in films than watching theatre. I do like theatre sometimes.
Here we are at the Vault Festival.
Wrong crowd.
Guys, before we wrap up, are there any questions from the audience? Can we watch anything on YouTube? This man's from Portugal.
Yeah.
So you just came to this without seeing a show? That's hilarious.
Well, maybe he knew the... Did you know the podcast?
No. No, they just went past. There's an absolute walk-up. Oh, we can't be responsible for this level of enthusiasm about... Yeah. Well, you can...
We suck when it comes to YouTube. I think we're trying to start to think about that, so maybe there'll be something coming soon. But, yeah, we've got a rubbish trailer for the show that you can watch on YouTube, but that...
I think we find it hard sometimes to think of things in 5-minute segments, whereas we think of... Because we're used to doing shows that are an hour long, but it's definitely something that we
want to try. And that's crazy, because obviously there are plot reasons why certain jokes and callbacks wouldn't work, but any 3 gags in a row of that show would work if you just spent 5 minutes writing it into a 3-minute...
We should definitely do that.
Yeah. You should definitely do that. All right, you've been told.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
Great question.
Well, Nathan is a really good actor and is like...
Stop it.
So it's like you just completely believe everything he's saying. So it's like he's also really good. Also, when writing it, he's, I think, good at coming up with really funny lines. I think... and like clever lines that are maybe like our clever jokes Nathan comes up with most, and Tom is like, as we said, really good clown and has a look in his eye that he doesn't really know what's going on at any point.
It's just a look, that's it.
Yeah,
there's nothing behind it,
and is really good at performing, making the audience laugh, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll say, yeah. I think Zach's very good at character comedy. So he kind of I think personally finds more like a lot of comedy from characters and the way he finds comedy from real life, I think, and finds real genuine like people that you can relate to that you've seen act like that, but are quite original as well, that you haven't seen done a million times over and over again.
I just want to underline that I chuckled there, not at the idea you were good at character comedy, but because when you said that, it made me think of the guy you do who's the son of the barman, who does a great impression of Jimmy Johnson. Because that face that you do when you're being his son, but like it's the son of the barman, but he looks like a really kind of aggressive teen on a... Do you know what I mean? I don't even know I don't even know if that character has a name, but
that guy, forever nameless. But.
I was just remembering it, and it made me laugh because it's fucking great.
Yeah, so Zach's really good at that, and then Tom is, I think Tom's
the pause. I think, come
on. Tom's like a bit of a wild card, I think, where a lot of the time, where like he'll generate like loads and loads of jokes, and like a lot of them will be not good, but they're often really, really like out of the box of just like mad. And then like one of them will just be brilliant, I think.
Like, something sometimes with Tom, I think we're not thinking about the same show in our heads right now when we're writing it, which can cause conflict sometimes, but also sometimes cool ideas that are out of the box. And
We wouldn't think of necessarily.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example of a sort of one of Tom's jokes from the show?
No.
Not, harsh.
Well, it's hard to remember who wrote the
Sure.
But it's more just along the lines of, I think me and you are sort of imagining it in one way and Tom's imagining it a different way. And sometimes he says things and I'm a bit like, what? Why? That's not what is going on right now. But then that can bring really good things sometimes.
Yeah.
There's often, in the second show with like the glow sticks where you spin them around and they like make a bike and things like that. Sometimes awesome. I think in like a really visual way.
Was that yours?
Yeah.
That's so good.
And like they'll look at me like that will never work.
What you can I just about? Say, he thought of it as two fans that I hold that are plugged in. So it wasn't...
The actual effect for people who haven't seen it, and it's a dazzler. It's one of those things that you describe when you go, you've got to see the show, they do this bit when. It's such a highlight. Just doing a kind of like a Tron bike by one person clambering over and miming being on a bike, and then the other two are spinning a glow stick on a piece of string. And it sounds shit, and it looks absolutely brilliant. So, sorry, Tom's original idea was two fans...
That I had a fan when I was a kid that like had little like LEDs in it, and when you turned it on, it would like spin.
Ah,
and,
yeah, yeah, you know, yeah, like a wheel. Yeah.
But then it was easier to do it with the glow sticks.
Yeah, it ended up being easier with glow sticks than plugging two fans in and bringing those on stage.
Really long extension cords.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, oh, I have to say what I like.
About them. We've got to wrap up. The place is falling apart.
Basically, what we said before, I think we'll probably do.
We really get a sense of what Tom brings
well,
to
well, come on. If you'd been nicer about me, then maybe I would have. Yeah. No, they're just really good. I think. More. Oh, come on, more. There's so many things. I think it's those characters and stuff, and the way we write is like, I think Zach and Nate are both brilliant at like coming with like knowing the prestige of something and coming with those ideas is really, really useful. And I think actually Nate, I think, is really good at just like holding the team together. He really kind of leads it and is like, oh, we'll be there at this time, we'll do this thing, you know, and it's kind of the boring run of the
admin.
Mill. Yeah.
Great work, Nate.
I'm the geek.
Yeah. But he's also really good at just like keeping morale up. Like I thought that earlier when you said that, because he will like look at things in a very like level-headed way and then also be really funny as well, so
and calm down the arguments as well.
Yeah, me and Zach sometimes get a bit heated, mainly because we're thinking about it in two different, completely different ways.
That's it,
guys. We've got to wrap up, I'm afraid. I'm really enjoying that. Sorry to nip it in the bud. If you would like to hear 275 conversations with other comedians about their work, you can go to comedianscomedian.com. And if you want to see more from the Police Cops, you can see them scratch 20 minutes of the new show on March the 15th.
Mm-hmm, yeah, March 15th to March the 17th.
Sorry, I should be addressing Nate.
Daddy. Yeah, 15th to 17th. The show is just called A Scratch. So just come see that.
Great. Thank you so much. Can we have a warm round of applause, ladies and gentlemen, for Police Cops? So that was Police Cops. Thank you very much to Tom, Nathan and Zach. As they said there, I think was it the 15th of March? They've got a scratch night coming up. Have a look on the website. And I'm not sure if the website is still The Pretend Men, but I'm sure you can track it down. If it's not Police Cops already, then Google The Pretend Men as well, and you will be sure to find them. They are just an absolute joy to see live, and I cannot recommend that show enough. I'm very excited to hear they're taking a third all-new show to Edinburgh, so get along to see them whenever you can. And they're on tour at the moment. I know they're coming to Bristol, and presumably they've got a wider tour than just that. So have a look online and find out and go along and see them. They're one of those people. Look, I can't offer this to everyone, but you know, every so often there'll be someone where you're like, go and see this or this album or this movie, and if you don't like it, I will refund your money. You might say that to one individual friend. That's how I feel about these. That is absolutely not an offer that I'm making you, the listener. But do go and check them out. So thank you to the boys for coming along. Thank you very much to Breed Kirby for helping sort that one out, and indeed the incredible work she's doing at Vault Festival. And you really got to get along and see it. It's something else. This is the first time I've been along, and I properly felt like I was stepping into another world. So I hope you'll go and see some of the fabulous comedy and other stuff, because other stuff does exist. It's easy to forget. Fabulous stuff that they've got as part of that festival this year, and all the ones in the future. That's everything for now. Thanks very much for listening. Do get in touch with me, info@comedianscomedian.com or at ComComPod on all of the socials, all of the ones that that matter. No postamble this week and no middle blurb either. You can find out details for my tour. I'm releasing on the 28th of February. We're going on, that's the plan, we're going on sale with the second leg of the tour, which is going to all of the places that you've all been tweeting at me saying, hey, why aren't you coming to a so-and-so? That's happening, and it's going to happen later this year. But we're releasing tickets for that leg of the tour on the 28th of February, and there will also be a lovely announcement. I'm hoping to also release my, in inverted commas, DVD. What are we calling them? I'm too British to say my special. Shall I just call it, oh, for the sake of the podcast, I'm releasing my special. Last year's tour show, Like I Mean It, properly recorded, properly edited, and it's a really beautiful artifact. I'm releasing that in a couple of different forms, but I will say more about that when I speak to you next. Extras from other episodes, not this one, no extras from this one, we just went straight through with the hour. But extras from lots and lots of episodes and other stuff beside, all available at the Insiders Club at comedianscomedian.com/insiders. That's everything. I will have a longer chat with you next time we speak. Bye for now.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.